Hello again, everyone. Welcome to the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. I'm Brian Dinovellis, and what have we learned 1 week into the college basketball season? Well, UConn and St. John's are very good second-half teams. They're also top 25 teams. Seton Hall has a long way to go. A long way to go. But Shaheen Holloway says, be patient. Be patient. In Shaw we trust. Hey, is Fordham really the 14th best team in the 15-team Atlantic 10? Because if that's the case, I want to see the other 13 teams ahead of them. What else have we learned? You'd better play all 40 minutes against Princeton, because if you don't, they will beat you, whether it's in the 38th, 39th, or 40th minute. Princeton is undefeated. And look out, Northeast Conference. The Central Connecticut Blue Devils have served notice. They are as good as advertised following their upset of St. Joe's in Philadelphia. We've got all these stories on this episode of the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. But first, we are brought to you by Mike Supa of RE/MAX Revolution. Mike is a trusted name in real estate. If you're looking to buy, sell, or list a home down the Jersey Shore, we're talking Monmouth and Ocean Counties, give Mike a call at 201-988-2577 and tell him that Brian sent you from the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. All right, let's begin with the 22nd ranked team in the country. The St. John's Red Storm are ranked for the first time since January 7th of 2019. The Johnnies crack into the top 25 at number 22 this week in the AP top 25 poll. Why? They had a strong opening week. All right. They routed Fordham by 32 on opening night. And then they had to come back. Yes, I said come back against Quinnipiac in the second half, where they dominated the Bobcats and stormed ahead to win convincingly. So, before we get to the Quinnipiac game, I just want to say this about the Fordham game. Game one was just never close. St. John's took care of business against Fordham like they had to. Fordham was never in this game. Simeon Wilcher broke out and had his welcome to college basketball game. A career high 17 points. This is a kid out of Roselle Catholic who we all know was top 60 in the country, was highly regarded, and had to sit and wait his turn and be patient and hope that what Rick Pitino was saying last year would come true and that he would have his opportunity this year. Well, we have seen what Sim Wilcher can do. He is fast. He is athletic. He was efficient. That left-handed jam. Oh, my. This kid gets up at 6'4". Simeon Wilcher is unlike a lot of other players in an era of NIL. I've said this before. Most players would have transferred out of St. John's after the year they had last year, where they had to sit and watch and wait and bite their tongue. I might have transferred. But Simeon Wilcher had faith in the progress, had faith in Rick Pitino, his head coach, probably listened to a lot of people that were close to him, parents, relatives, handlers, whoever it was. And he is unlike many other in this day and age. And St. John's is so glad that he stayed, because that trifecta in the backcourt of Wilcher and Kadari and Davon Smith, wait until they start to eat, because they haven't all been on the same page. And when they do, look out. Kadari Richmond, very good in game one, not so good in game two, but you're going to have these moments. All right. All three of these players, Smith and Wilcher and Kadari, they're going to have their moments, but there's going to be nights where they're not all clicking or all having great games, because there's just not enough balls to go around. Okay. But I loved what St. John's did in game one. They had the crowd behind them. The offense was strong. The defense was strong. Very good game all around. Now, I want to talk more about game two, Quinnipiac, because the Bobcats, for 20 minutes, were not only in this game, but they were leading by four. Now, in St. John's defense, there was no Aaron Scott. He was sick, hadn't practiced, had to sit out. Rick Pitino did say after the game, he hopes that he thinks that he'll play Wednesday against Lemoyne. But Aaron Scott is a big missing piece of this team, especially defensively. All right, this is a player who you know I'm high on if you've listened to this podcast. 6'7", stretches the floor, can put the ball on the ground, can get to the hoop, and is a very good defensive player. So you take him out, and R.J. Lewis, although he deserves to start, he was going to sit for this game. He was not going to start if Scott was healthy, because if you recall, Lewis had that technical foul where he got upset against Fordham, and he kicked the ball into the stands, had a technical. He has apologized for it. Lewis did, to his credit, but he was going to be benched for the start of this game and was not going to start. But Scott being sick put Lewis back into the lineup, and how did he respond? Well, he responded like R.J. Lewis does. 24 points, a career-high 13 rebounds, 16-9 in the second half when St. John's needed him. R.J. Lewis was a beast, and I've said this before. He is going to lead the Red Storm in scoring this season. He has all-league caliber, not because he's a great scorer, but because of what he can do for this team. And he showed it against Quinnipiac. But that first half, let's rewind a little bit. Quinnipiac came out firing. They hit six threes in 20 minutes, and most of those, five of those six, came from Belmar's Ryan Mabry. Some of the fans listening may know this name. Mabry's a Jersey kid, has three older sisters who all start at Manasquan High School for head coach Lisa Kokoda, the number one ranked team in New Jersey. They've all gone on to star in college and even beyond in the WNBA. I think it's Marina that's now in the WNBA. I forget, but one of them plays in the WNBA. My point is this. It's in his blood. It's in the Mabry blood that you can shoot. And if you watch this game, he hit five threes in the first 6 minutes and 14 seconds. Five threes. He ended up with 17 points. So after the first five, he didn't hit another three. Credit St. John's D. But look out for this kid. He transferred from Miami of Ohio, and Tom Pecora went out and got him and put him out there with his incumbents, with Savion Lewis and Paul Otieno and Amari Monroe. And the Bobcats are going to be clicking in the MAC, trust me. So they're up four at the half, and Pitino regroups. Pitino comes out in the second half, and this team was cooking. They found the switch. They scored 61 points. 61 in the second half. Oh, by the way, Seton Hall scored 56 in their entire game against Fordham, but we'll get to them later. Think about that. St. John scored more in one half than Seton Hall did in an entire game. Okay? That's how much this team was cooking. It was R.J. Lewis, as I already said. It was Davon Smith. He had his welcome to St. John's moment with a double-double. 13 points, 10 assists. And Lewis and Brady Dunlap were scoring. And Davon Smith was the one doing the assisting. I saw him struggle in the preseason. Johnny's fans, he was figuring out his way, Davon Smith was. And he broke out against Quinnipiac because as Lewis and Dunlap were scoring and shooting from distance, it was Smith who was setting them up. There was a crucial stretch the first 8 minutes of the second half. Lewis had 12 points. Smith had 4 assists and 2 or 3 steals. And then we saw Dunlap heating up. He finished with a career high 20, by far the best game of the sophomore's career. 5 of 7 from distance. So Dunlap was doing it from distance. Smith was doing it in all facets of the game, offensively and defensively. And Lewis was doing it inside and outside. And in the second half, St. John's just ran away with this one, and they won by 23. So they were plus 27 in the second half. Wow. Here's Rick Pitino in his post-game comments about the slow start and the play of Dunlap and Davon.
I think Brady is the reason we blew him out. I think Brady and Vince gave us a big lift, and I thought Davon did a great job of finding Brady. He knew to penetrate and find Brady. Brady did a super job of moving without the basketball. But Davon was the catalyst for that. But they're still getting to know each other. I was very impressed with the second half that they responded the way they responded. Didn't panic. Did the right things from a defensive standpoint, did the right things from an offensive standpoint. But without question, Brady, Vince, our point guard, did a fabulous job of finding the open people. Davon.
Pitino also threw it out there publicly. He may start Vince Iwuchukwu at center in place of Zubi Ejiofor, who's been struggling. Maybe the worst thing that happened to Zubi was that game against Rutgers where he had 27 and 13. You saw Zubi in that game that I hope that's not the ceiling. I hope that's not what we're going to remember Zubi for this season. A preseason exhibition where the stats don't count. But he doesn't have that fire. Pitino went out of his way to say in his post game that, you know, Zubi had no offensive rebounds, 0. All right, and we were spoiled the last 2-3 years with the offensive rebounding of Joel Soriano and the rebounding in general. Big fella, you have to rebound. Offensive rebounding is about where you put yourself. It's about heart, it's desire, it's hustle, it's positioning, and we're not seeing that. But we're seeing it from Iwuchukwu because he looked hungry. He was running the floor. He's not going to wow you with his statistics, but there's a reason why Pitino went out and got him from USC and brought him to Queens. He's got size, he's got athleticism, and he can be a matchup problem, and he can get a lot of hustle points. So when Pitino puts it out there publicly, don't be surprised if Iwuchukwu is starting in place of Zubi. Because if he's not, that means that Zubi got the message loud and clear, and he showed it in practice. So the Johnnies, for their efforts, are now ranked for the first time in 5 years. Big week ahead. I said they host Lemoyne. That was UConn that hosts Lemoyne this week. St. John's hosts Wagner. I'm corrected. And then the biggie. New Mexico, they're creeping up in the top 25 voting, all right? They received votes this week. If you noticed, New Mexico just upset number 22 UCLA. They led that game from start to finish. So the younger Pitino, Richard, has things cooking in New Mexico. Look out, the Lobos off to a great start. Father versus son should be a little juice. Noon tip-off at Madison Square Garden. Both teams should be undefeated when St. John's hosts New Mexico and Father coaches against son on Sunday. All right, let's talk UConn. the third-ranked team in the country. They also manhandled their first opponent in Sacred Heart and struggled a little bit in Game 2 against New Hampshire. Opening night, they raised the championship banner, number 6, the basketball capital of the world. Huge night for Alex Caravan against Sacred Heart. I mean, a lot of players had big nights in this game. Sacred Heart never in the game. Caravan, what stood out? What didn't stand out? 20 points, 7 assists, 6 rebounds, and a career-high 7 blocks. 7. Alex, where did that come from?
I was roommates with Donovan Klingon for 2 years. So when you're roommates with the best defender in the country for the last 2 years, you learn a couple things from him. So I'm going to give credit to him for the blocks.
Just his basketball brain, you know, and his discipline. And, you know, obviously his experience. It's like having another coach on the court. It's like cheating.
There you go. His former roommate, Donovan Klingon, getting all the credit. But let's face it, okay? Donovan Klingon is 7'2". Caravan is 6'8". Whatever it is, he is eating on the defensive end. 7 blocks in the first game, 4 in the second, just to prove it was no fluke against New Hampshire. He's got 11 blocks in 2 games. And according to ESPN stats, here you go. Caravan is the first person since 2003, that's 21 years, to have 20 points, 7 assists, and 7 blocks in a game. Liam McNeely starts off the season with 2 double-doubles. The freshman, all right, Indiana fans, have you noticed? Because he was going there, and I'm wondering how many Indiana fans are keeping tabs on a player who spurned the Hoosiers to come east to UConn. He put up double-doubles in his first 2 games. This is the stat on McNeely. The first UConn freshman to start his career with back-to-back double-doubles since none other than Middletown, Connecticut's Corny Thompson in 1978. Corny Thompson, the player I loved growing up. My favorite UConn player growing up. 1978. That's how far back you have to go to find a UConn freshman that started his career with back-to-back double-doubles. 1978. That's how good Liam McNeely is. So UConn is just, they're doing what they need to do, okay? But it's coming from all sides. It's not just Caravan. Terrace Reed from Michigan looks like the part at center. And I'm going to tell you this, all right? He is doing what Samson Johnson cannot, all right? If there's one negative in UConn's start, it's Samson Johnson. 9 fouls in 2 games against inferior opponents. He fouled out against Sacred Heart. Had 4 more fouls against New Hampshire. He is not understanding what to do defensively or offensively. He is totally out of sorts. So don't be surprised if Terrace Reed Jr. replaces Sampson in that lineup, because Reed is showing you why they went out and got him. He is averaging 13 points and 9.5 rebounds in UConn's first 2 games. Start him until Sampson can figure it out. Against New Hampshire, nobody did anything well in that first half. All right? UConn trailed New Hampshire by 11 at the half, and you would have thought they were losing or I'm sorry, UConn was leading New Hampshire by 11 at the half, but you would have thought they were trailing the way they played. And even Hurley said afterward, you know, we did some bizarre stuff in the first half, trying to make 25-point shots. He didn't like the defense. He said they were undisciplined. But you knew UConn would come out on fire in the second half. We saw a much more aggressive team. And boy, we know what to expect of McNeely being a top 10, you know, kid in the draft class and Caravan, right? But Solo Ball and Jaden Ross, what we're seeing is sophomores developing, sophomores taking that next step. I mean, Solo Ball, he is so much fun to watch with the ball in his hand. How quick is he? How fast is he? How shifty is he? He went off in the second half and was one of the reasons why UConn was, you know, so good. He works hard off the ball. He's tough to guard. And then you see Jaden Ross, another wing in the long list of UConn wings. I mean, he hit a couple of threes. He had a driving dipsy-doo scoop to the hoop that Bill Raftery absolutely loved. So, Ross and Ball, so important to the development of this UConn team. Player development, player retention. When you're as good as Dan Hurley and you win back-to-back championships, why would any player want to leave, right? Give it a chance. Wait your turn. And if you're patient, your time will come. And a player who has been super patient in Hassan Diarra, who was the Big East sixth man of the year, because there's so much talent on this roster, he's being squeezed a little bit. But if there's anyone who can accept his role and handle the minutes that he gets and get the most out of the time that he's out there, it's Hassan Diarra. So, look, this team, as long as their players accept their roles, and they will, they're going to continue to feast as they prepare for Feast Week in Maui. They have Lemoyne on Wednesday, and then a school called Texas A&M Commerce on November 19th. A couple of former D2 teams who, over the last two or three years, have made the transition to Division I. Lemoyne in the Northeast Conference, and I believe Texas A&M Commerce is in the Southland Conference, if I'm not mistaken. But look, UConn's going to be 4-0. They're going to be undefeated going into Maui, where they face Memphis, and then the competition really amps up. All right, with the likes of Michigan State and North Carolina and Iowa State. All right. The winner of that tournament will be sitting very pretty, undefeated, heading into December. One team who is not sitting pretty right now, who is absolutely licking their wounds and figuring out what went wrong, what do we need to do, is Seton Hall. They struggled in their opener mightily against St. Peter's, and it was Chauncey Jenkins who pulled them out of the doldrums, and Prince Oligbe, who made some shots late in that game to avoid an upset against St. Peter's on opening night at The Rock. This team was not as fortunate against Fordham. I was worried about this game. They don't play Fordham too often. And the ghosts of Fordham past, John Prelew, Mike Rice in yesteryear. Yes, Mike Rice was a Fordham Ram on those teams in 89, 90, 91, back-to-back seasons that defeated Seton Hall. You have to go back to 1989 when Fordham beat Seton Hall at Walsh Gym. That's the last time Seton Hall lost a non-conference regular season matchup at Walsh Gym. Now, I get it. They don't play there every year, and if they do, they play one, maybe two games at most. But the point is, they just don't lose in that building because they're not scheduling challenging non-conference games. So Fordham actually beat them that year and then beat them the year they went to the Elite Eight. They beat them at Rose Thrill on a buzzer beater by John Prelew when Seton Hall had Tahir and Karnishevis and Caver and so many great players on that team. I believe Gordon Winchester on that team as well. Jerry Walker. So John Prelue, he didn't hit the buzzer beater this time. No, sir. This time it was Jackie Johnson III. Again, Seton Hall was, I'm going to say, pathetic offensively. They never, ever, ever had any control of this game. Fordham was in it from the very beginning. All right, there was no double-digit lead in this game for either team. It seemed like it was a 3-4-5-point game the entire game. And when it came down to crunch time and Seton Hall had opportunities, what came to bite them in the ass? Free throw shooting, turnovers, and silly fouls. Seton Hall was up 4 at the free throw line with 20 seconds to play. And Chauncey Jenkins, their best player, who struggled in this game, missed the second of 2 free throws. He did that twice in the second half, missing the second of 2 free throws. And now Fordham's down 4, and they come down and they get fouled, shooting a 3. Whatever you want to say, was it a foul, was it not? Ref called it. And Fordham knew how to sink the free throws. Will Richardson sank not 1, not 2, but all 3 free throws. And now Fordham is down 1. Seton Hall inbounds the ball. All they have to do is run out the clock or get fouled. They break the press. And Dylan Adewusu has the ball go right out of his hands, out of bounds. I don't know where he was going. He was in a hurry. Took his eye off the ball. It happens. He lost it out of bounds. However, this is a fifth-year senior. You have to know the situation. You have to be under control. It's easy for me to say this, but this is what you expect of your fifth-year seniors. You expect them to make the plays in crunch time. They've been there. Where are you going? You don't need a layup in that situation. They had a defender back. It was 2-on-1 at best with the trailer being 3-on-1. But again, catch the ball, dribble away, pass away, and maybe you run out the clock. Instead, Fordham gets the ball. They get the ball over half court. They call timeout with about 7 seconds left. And in the huddle, Shaheen Holloway told his team they're going to try to get the ball to their best player, Jackie Johnson III. He's going to try to go left, take away his left, force him to his right. That's what Shaheen told his defenders in the huddle. Isaiah Coleman was ISO'd 1-on-1. Did he play good defense? That's debatable. Was he on his man? Yes. Okay. He was closely guarded, but he let Johnson get to his spot. He let him dribble left, never cut him off, never forced him to the right, never forced the ball out of his hands. And Johnson hit a tough 16-foot left-handed runner. He is lefty, and it goes in at the buzzer, released it with 0.2 seconds left. He hit a tough shot, yes, but that's a shot that he hit because Coleman allowed him to dribble left and get to his spot. So instead of Seton Hall holding on for another nail-biting win against a very much a mid-major team, instead they blow a game where they couldn't make plays in crunch time. And this has Shaheen Holloway shaking his head, but he's saying, don't give up on us. He wasn't PO'd in his press conference. All he said to the fans was, don't give up on us.
It's a long season. It's a long year, man. It's you watch college basketball this time of year, it happens. A lot of big teams is going down. Shouldn't happen, but that's part of it, right? We're a team that's a lot of new guys trying to put it together. It's not an excuse. It's real, and we're going to get better. You can guarantee that. I guarantee that. we didn't lose this game today. We lost this game on Wednesday. You know, we're not practicing well. We're not playing well right now. But sometimes you got to lose to win. And I think we're going to learn from this game. I got to do a better job with these guys. Still getting to know them. It's not an excuse. It's the truth. But, you know, give Fordham credit. They came here. They play hard. I think two games in a row, teams is out scrapping us, out playing us, which is not good. That's kind of what we do. But we'll get better, and we're going to learn from this. And when we pair together, it's going to be really good, but we ain't there yet.
So Holloway's not giving up. Seton Hall shouldn't give up. But there have been many years, and I pointed out one many years ago in 1990-91 when Seton Hall lost to Fordham and went to the Elite Eight. This team is not going to the Elite Eight. Let's make things clear. All right, Terry DeHaere and Jerry Walker and Arturis Karnišovas are not walking through that door. But what you have is you have a team that has to figure it out. Shaheen Holloway, in an NIL era, has assembled this team. He had to fill 10 spots. He didn't want to put all his eggs in one basket. He didn't want to overpay and pay a large portion of his NIL money to Dre Davis or Kadari Richmond. He loved those players, but the NIL opportunity dictated that he needed to spread the wealth. He couldn't put all his eggs in one basket. And when you bring in players who, from mid to low majors, who have been scorers like Chauncey Jenkins, they're still going up in competition, all right? He was a scorer at Old Dominion, a very good player, but he's going to have highs and lows, all right? Fordham did a great job getting the ball out of his hands, double-teaming him, and only allowing him 7 shots. They wanted other players to beat them. So my point is this. You have other players who need to be scorers, but they weren't necessarily scorers from the places they've come from. So what do I mean by that? Scotty Middleton didn't play much as a freshman at Ohio State. Garway Duwell didn't play much as a freshman, was not a scorer at Providence. Gus Yeldon didn't play at all at Wisconsin, was not a scorer. Zion Harmon came from a lower major in Bethune-Cookman, was a scorer, but is stepping up. Prince Oligbe was not a scorer at Boston College. You see what I'm getting at here. You're asking all of these players to come in to Seton Hall and become scorers or become leaders. They need to figure out their roles and how they all fit in. So you're not getting high-level transfers who were high-level scorers to come in here and produce. So it may get uglier before it gets better, okay, Seton Hall fans? It may get worse before it gets better. If anyone can do it, it's Shaheen Holloway. But make no mistake about it, it's not going to be easy. They've already proven it's not going to be easy. They have Hofstra coming up, all right? That is a home game in a neutral site on Long Island, but it's a home game for Hofstra. And then they have Wagner, and then they go to the Charleston Classic, and who knows, VCU, okay? VCU is the preseason favorite in the Atlantic 10. That's their first game in Charleston. They just lost to a team in Fordham who was predicted 14 out of 15 in the Atlantic 10. And if they just beat you on your home court, what could happen when the best team in the Atlantic 10 faces you on a neutral court? So whatever it is, Seton Hall needs to figure it out quickly, because as Yogi Berra once said, it could get late very early around here. But I am certainly not going to give up on Shaheen Holloway. And Seton Hall fans should not give up on Shaheen Holloway. All right? There are a lot of teams out there. You've already seen it. You've already seen Butler lose it at home to Austin Peay. You've already seen Villanova lose to a bottom feeder in the Ivy League in Columbia. And last year they lost to Penn. So Villanova just should stop scheduling Ivy League teams. So it happens, and you can still have success, and you can still win games in conference and have a winning season. But it's going to take time, so be patient. All right, Fordham, meanwhile, I mean, they just made their season. And Keith Ergo is extremely ecstatic because this team has a chip on their shoulder, and this team is proving that they've got some players, and they've got a nasty backcourt in Jackie Johnson III and Will Richardson and people who can make plays. So if anyone is excited, it's Keith Ergo. And he feels, you know, he said afterward, feels like he has a great group of guys. They're connected and they have a chance to be a very good team. So it's huge for their morale. It's huge for them going forward. And maybe Fordham is going to be better than we thought they would be in the Atlantic 10. So look out, Rams. It's going to be an interesting week ahead for both Seton Hall as they host Hofstra, a team that beat a very good Iona team on their home court. All right. And a team that has a former Seton Hall player in Jaquan Sanders, who had 24 points against Hofstra. I think he hit four threes against Iona, I mean, in that game. So you think Jaquan Sanders is going to want this game? You better believe he does. All right? Speedy Claxton can coach. Shaheen Holloway knows it. This is another very dangerous game for Seton Hall. Now, back to the positives in the Tri-State. A team that really, really has looked dynamite in their first three games. They've had to come from behind to win all three, but Princeton is 3-0. They beat Iona coming from behind, double digits in the second half. They beat Duquesne coming from behind, double digits in the second half. And then they go on the road and won at a very good Northeastern team, having to come from behind in the final 4 minutes, in the final 3 minutes, and in the final minute in this seesaw affair. Princeton makes plays in crunch time. And it's not just Caden Pierce and Xavier Lee, although they are very, very, very good. So let's take the three games briefly, one by one. Iona should have won that game. My guy Frank Papalia has season tickets to Princeton. He goes with his son, James, and I know they listen to the podcast. He was texting me during the game and saying, Iona is running Princeton out of the building. Iona deserves to win this game. Princeton has no shot. But if you know Frank, and I love him, the sky is always falling. So he speaks in extremes. And I said, it's early. It's the first half. It's Princeton. And sure enough, Princeton came from behind in spite of everything that Iona did. And Iona has a very, very good freshman in Adam Njai. Man, this kid is a freshman from Cardinal Hayes, and he is a major player. If anyone can find talent out there, it's Tobin Anderson. We know that. And he's found another dynamite one. He found, you know, many last year, Gene Aaron Gurin. All right, he had a very good year at Iona, and then he's another player that's gone to Hofstra for Speedy Claxton. Tobin finds him, and Njai had 19 points in his collegiate debut. He was named MAC Freshman of the Week, I believe it was, receiving his first honor, and rightfully so. They played very well, and Clarence Rupert, former St. Peter Peacock, on that Elite Eight team. I remember him very well out of Philadelphia. He is a dude. So between Njai and Rupert, Iona had Princeton on their heels. But Princeton chipped away, and Xavier Lee to the rescue, right? If you haven't heard by now, Xavier Lee hit two free throws with 3 seconds to go, with Princeton down one. Hit both free throws, ice water in his veins, and Princeton wins 81-80. Xavier Lee showing why with 27 points, he will be playing in the NBA. He will be an NBA player. Book it. And he's being mentored by another great Asian NBA player in Jeremy Lin. So he's being mentored by one of the best. So Xavier Lee is the hero in game one. Game two, they're playing in Trenton last Friday. And again, Princeton finds themselves down by double digits, down 11 with 13 minutes to play. And it's the veterans. It's Blake Peters. It's Caden Pierce. It's Xavier Lee, along with the super sophomore, Dalen Davis. Davis, we saw him emerging last year as a freshman who was going to be a star as a sophomore, and we're seeing it now. Davis and Pierce hit threes late in that game. Peters hit some big buckets and free throws down the stretch. Pierce was MVP of this game, but make no mistake. You could have given it to Davis. You could have given it to Peters. Xavier Lee nearly had a triple-double with 13, 9 assists, and 8 rebounds, and Princeton just made the plays late, and they had a couple of 7-0 runs late, and they won 75-68 against the Duquesne team that made the NCAA tournament last year and is very good once again this year. All right, then we go to the Northeastern game, and again, more stars emerging. Peters has a career-high 18 points, all threes, okay? Career-high 18, a career-high 6 three-pointers. One was bigger than the next. It seemed like every big three that he took with 10 minutes to go, with 8 minutes to go, with 5 minutes to go, Blake Peters was taking and making. And then he hits a three to put them up one with 27 seconds left. 75-74. Northeastern regains the lead on a layup. And then everyone's looking at Lee late in the game. Princeton down one in the final seconds. And it's the freshman. The freshman. Malik Abdullahi. Hitting a short jumper in the lane, getting fouled. He missed the free throw, but that little short jumper put Princeton up by one with 5 seconds to play. And then, if that wasn't enough, the freshman again, Abdullahi, gets a steal, gets fouled with 1 second left, and he iced the game with both free throws. Princeton wins 79-76. They trailed in all three games. They won all three games. We're seeing veterans, we're seeing super sophomores, we're seeing freshmen all making plays. And I didn't even mention Jacob Huggins, who had 12 points in his first start at center for Princeton. They're at it again. They are right where they thought they'd be. They are at the top of the Ivy League. Yale's right there as well, don't get me wrong. But Princeton is preseason favorites for a reason. And now, coming to Jadwin Gym on Friday night, none other than Loyola of Chicago. Sister Jean, she's still alive. If you played Dead or Alive with Sister Jean, and you guessed alive, you would be correct. 105 years old. There's no truth to the rumor that she would be at Jadwin Gym, okay? But this is a Loyola team that is tournament tested, that is one of the top mid-majors every year. And Duquesne was right there, Princeton scheduling Duquesne, and now they get Loyola of Chicago, another very good mid-major team that decided to play Princeton, another very good mid-major team. So that is going to be something on Friday night. So Princeton has a big week ahead. And before we go, one more team in the tri-state that I want to mention, Central Connecticut. All right, they pulled off one of the big upsets in the early part of the season as Central upset St. Joe's in Philly. Huge win for Patrick Sellers. They are the preseason favorites in the Northeast Conference and showing why Patrick Sellers can coach his ass off. That is one guy who has gotten better. His teams have gotten better and had more wins. This is his fourth year, and every year his teams have increased their wins. Last year they had 20. Don't be surprised if they're at 21, 22 this year, because Sellers can coach. And they went to St. Joe's and won that game. And for their efforts, Jordan Jones was Northeast Conference Player of the Week. Darren Smith was the Freshman of the Week, the Rookie of the Week in the Northeast Conference. Jones averaged 17 points, 3.5 rebounds, and 3 assists in the 2 games. All right. Central nearly beat Providence in game 1. Okay. They had Providence on the ropes. They were winning for a good chunk of that game. And Jones had 21 points on the night at the dunk. We know how hard it is to play there. And Providence was lucky to survive that game. And then they go on the road, all right, at Providence, at St. Joe's, and earn a split. Jones's first team preseason NEC, and he's going to be carrying them all year, but Darren Smith is a good one as well. He came off the bench and had 13 points and a couple of steals in the win over St. Joe's. He's not a true freshman. He's a redshirt freshman, but this is his first year of playing basketball. So Smith doing it, Jones doing it. Look out for Central Connecticut. We are off to a great start in the tri-state. I didn't get to Rutgers. When I recorded this podcast, Rutgers was going to be hosting St. Peter's on Monday. So I didn't want to talk too much Rutgers, but I will have more on the Rutgers-St. Peter's game in my next podcast. I promise you that. Before we go, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to thank my sponsor, Mike Supa of Remax Revolution. If you're looking to buy, sell, or list a home down the Jersey Shore, give Mike a call, 201-988-2577. And that will do it for this episode of the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Don't forget to tell your friends about the podcast. Please share it. Please continue to download it. And I thank you for listening. Until next time, enjoy the games, everyone. My name is Brian Dean of Ellis. So long.